Okay, let's go ahead and get started, if we could. Good afternoon. This is a public rulemaking hearing held in accordance with the State Administrative Procedure Act, specifically Section 24-4-103. The date is February 6, 2007. The time is 2:04 p.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Conference Room on the third floor of the Office of the Secretary of State, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm convening this hearing in accordance with the rulemaking notice that was published in the Colorado Register on January 10, 2007. The purpose of the hearing is to receive comments from the public on proposed amendments to the Secretary of State's rules concerning campaign and political finance. The Secretary of State's office prepared a draft of proposed amendments to the rules that was distributed to the public and published on the office website. On January 30th, 2007, a revised draft of the proposed rules was made available to the public and also published on the office website. And a copy of the revised draft is available on the table at the back of the room. As stated in the notice of rulemaking, the purpose of the proposed amendments is to adjust the contribution limits as required by Section 3 of Article 28 of the Colorado Constitution and to make other amendments to the campaign finance rules as may be necessary or appropriate to administer the provisions of Article 28 and Article 45 of Title 1, Colorado Revised Statutes. So the proposed rules would adjust the contribution and voluntary spending limits for inflation based on the percentage change over the last 4 years in the consumer price index for the Denver-Boulder Greeley area. The percentage change was rounded to the nearest whole percentage point, and all adjustments were rounded to the nearest lowest $25. And as a practical matter, they meant some of the low amounts did not get adjusted at all once the amounts are rounded to the nearest $25. The proposed rules would also repeal the implementation of fees for manual filings that would have become effective on April 2, 2007. The amended rule would instead implement mandatory electronic filing beginning on October 1, 2007, with exceptions for small reports and for hardship or other good cause shown. And I probably should give just a little more background for the record on that. Last year, Rule 11 was adopted in furtherance of two statutes that govern the Secretary of State's office. One of them is 21-104, I believe it is, that requires the Secretary of State's office to charge fees for filings, but more specifically, a driving force was Senate Bill 04-231, which was a bill sponsored by the Joint Budget Committee specifically to encourage electronic filing on the part of the Secretary of State's office. And the last year's Rule 11, which is currently scheduled to take effect April 2nd and would impose a fee, was an attempt to implement the requirement of the Joint Budget Committee through Senate Bill 231 to encourage electronic filing. However, questions did arise about that approach. Specifically, legislation and questions that arose led to legislation that was introduced in the current legislative sessions, House Bill 1032, which would have prohibited the Secretary of State from imposing any fee for campaign finance filings. Secretary Kaufman, considering the issue of whether or not the office ought to charge fees for campaign finance filings, agreed that that's not the best approach. And based on Secretary Kaufman's review of the issue, I advised the Committee of Reference that was considering House Bill 1032 that we would likely amend Rule 11 and propose instead an electronic filing requirement with hardship exceptions, which is consistent with Senate Bill 231. And that bill specifically enacted Section 24-21-111, which the draft rule that's before us attempts to follow, in that it doesn't absolutely require electronic filing, but it does require it, except for, again, as I said, smaller reports, plus those situations where someone can demonstrate a hardship or other good cause. So that's kind of the background on the rule. Those really just the two things that have been proposed in the January 30th proposed rules. The CPI adjustment and the change in the fee for electronic, or the fee for campaign finance filings. I should also, just for the record, introduce the other people that are with me at the table. To my far right, Stephanie Sigelski, legal specialist with the Elections Division of the Secretary of State's office. And then to her left is Wayne Munster, Deputy Director of the Office of Deputy Director of the Elections Division. I don't know why I was about to say Office of Legislative Legal Services. That's a flashback. And then to his left, Holly Lauder, our Elections Director. Then to my immediate left, Melody Mrbaba, Assistant Attorney General from the Attorney General's Office. And then to her left, Christy Hebbard, who's in charge of our campaign finance program in the Secretary of State's office. With that, just a few words before we turn to testimony. This is a formal rulemaking hearing, so the meeting is audio recorded. It's also broadcast over the Internet, and a recording of it will be available on the Secretary of State's website. For anybody who wishes to testify, there are sign-up sheets on the table near the door, and you must sign up in order to testify. With that, I think it's time to turn to public testimony. So I currently have two people signed up to testify. I'll start with Scott Shires. Mr. Shires.
Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. I want to have you please thank the Secretary for eliminating the fees from the rules. I believe at the last public testimony I argued generously that should not be allowed to occur. So whether Mr. Kaufman was listening to me while he was in Iraq or while he was still on the campaign trail, I appreciate the fact that has been eliminated. I have several comments regarding the mandatory electronic filings. I certainly understand the need to encourage that to reduce the need for paper entry and retyping. And I certainly have been a strong advocate of eliminating the retyping of campaign data filings. In my office, having coordinated very closely with your staff, both the technical staff and the election staff, in creating the ability to append directly to the database so that we have been virtually paperless with the Elections Division since September. And I know most of the staff is aware that I represent and do filings for over 100 committees, which represents a good portion of the state's active committees. And for us to go paperless was a welcome relief by both ourselves and the election staff, not having to retype and re-enter all of that. But I still have some problems with the way these rules are worded. And part of it may be in the definitions, and certainly it will be in the implementation. To be filed electronically certainly means a number of different things to different entities. For the most part, your website allows for the retyping of the data directly into the database, and that's how most entities interact with the Secretary of State's office, is to log on and to retype from any database that they've already created, any method that they're keeping track of their contributors. And certainly in that retyping is the level of opportunity for mistakes and deletions and just missing by eyeball, missing a line and not getting a full record in. So I'd like to see electronically defined as some of the different other aspects available. I know your office is working on an XMLS schema set up so that more people can append directly. I'm not even sure if I fully understand the work that my staff has done and its ability to EPI or directly append to your database, but I know that it certainly works in most cases, but certainly isn't completely ready at this stage. Now, by October 1st, we certainly hope that we can get there. But currently, we cannot file by appending to the Secretary of State's website either a termination report or an amended report. There is the means of working adjustment reports, but I think there's a small history of confusion in how adjustment reports work properly. Certainly, even with our level of expertise at Campaign Compliance Center, we have not done it correctly all the time. And I would say that we're your biggest user, and we still can't get it right all the time. So I would certainly like to have those two opportunities available before we go to mandatory electronic. My next concern is the 15 days prior to the first applicable filing deadline that a candidate or a committee file an exception to the rule and saying that it would be a hardship to file electronically. My concern there is that having been involved in party politics for 23 years in the state of Colorado and having made my first filing at the Secretary of State's office sometime in 1987, my involvement with as many committees as I have done, and I filed over 1,000 reports with your committee in 06, with the Secretary of State's office in 06, I filed over 1,000 reports, is the understanding and preparation of most candidates and or committee treasurers and what their responsibilities are or in their technical expertise. I'm just a little leery that even in Metro Denver, much less some of the other counties around the state, that every candidate for public office required to file either at county level or required to file a Secretary of State office is going to have the electronic means or the ability to do so. There are stories of people having difficulties getting to a fax machine to file by fax or how to even send a fax. There are stories of some clerks and recorders offices in the state not knowing how to prepare an electronic list of voters and only being able to provide paper copies. So I'm curious in some regard as to how there can be an absolute requirement for all committees and all candidates to meet this. I think the 15 days prior to the first applicable filing is unnecessary and should be stricken from the record. If someone shows up at your counter to turn in a paper report across the counter, that it should be accepted. And if there's a simple statement that they can file concurrent with that, that they should be allowed to do so. The same if they finally find themselves having completed a paper copy, walking into a county clerk and recorder's office, and an elections division person saying, sorry, you can't file it this way. You have to file it electronically, and it's 4 o'clock, and the report's due at 5. There should be a means that the public can be best served by still having the information available on record. And maybe by the next report, we can teach that candidate or that committee how to file a report electronically. I just think the rule as drafted is a tad harsh, and simply is going to create more error letters from the Secretary of State's office, the clerk and recorder's offices, more fines being assessed, and ultimately more fines possibly being waived several months later if they know how to write a waiver request letter. I'd also like to take this time in regards to all the work that the Elections Division and the Secretary of State's office has done in helping Campaign Compliance Center become a paperless filer to thank specifically Bill Veazey of the your staff information, Christy Heppert and Christy Reynolds. That's not meant to exclude other people that have also been involved in assisting CCC. It's just that those are the three people that we work with very closely on a very regular basis in making our electronic filing possible over the course of 2006. One of the other, I guess it may be more a regret because I understand it's constitutional and we can't impact it by rule unless we listen to the current debate about Amendment 41 and the ability to possibly restrict Amendment 41 by statute or by rule. Maybe we could do the same with Amendment 27, back up a little bit and simply urge that the $20 limit for contributions and expenses also be adjusted for CPI, though I would highly recommend that we follow something closer to federal levels and move it up to $100 or $200, which would eliminate a lot of filing by not having to account for all the small donations and small expenses. I'm sorry, but at this point in most banks, if you overdraft your account, it's a $38 fee, thereby recording a filing. So it would just seem to me that in the spirit of lessening the workload and still having compliance with disclosure, that $20 is an artificially low number. Not certain that we can do anything in the rule hearing, but I have the mic, and what the heck, it was a comment that I wanted to make. I also want to follow up once again on a comment that I made at a previous public hearing. I know it's not a rule that's being proposed here today, but I would simply urge the Secretary of State's office to consider it for a future rules hearing, and that would be to allow the Elections Division to have a published, coherent method of eliminating closed committees that are no longer responsive to the Secretary of State's office. There are currently nearly 900 committees that are listed or considered as active in this committee in this state, but I believe that only about 300 of them are capable of returning a mail notice to the Secretary of State's office or responding to a complaint letter or responding to a fine for failure to file reports. That there are simply a large number of issue, small donor, and candidate committees that never took the time or bothered to take the step to properly close themselves and terminate with a zero balance, and that there should be a coherent, published method for getting them out of the system, off your mailing list, under your radar, so you can concentrate on the committees that are actually active in the state. Any questions?
Yes, thank you. On the electronic filing rule, I just kind of wanted, because of all your experience, I kind of want to just flesh out a little bit more some discussion about the draft rule, if I could. There's two exceptions. I mean, the basic rule is that electronic filing for everybody. One of the exceptions is that individual report contains fewer than 30 entries. And the idea being that, I guess, that smaller reports may be people who have more likelihood of having difficulty. They may not have computers or whatever. I guess that's one theory.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have any feel for whether that's an appropriate number? Well, first of all, is it appropriate to just simply exempt smaller reports? Is that a reasonable approach? And second, is that a right number?
I think that's probably right, as long as you're defining both contributions and expenses as 30 entries. But my concern might be, let's take Defend Colorado now. When I first started asking the staff if there was a way that I could append so that there would not have to be a retyping, and we were still having those opening negotiations, once I walked in with the Defend Colorado 100-page report with over 600 entries, I had everybody's attention, and it became much more active. Let's see if we can help Scott solve his problem and ours at the same time. So it's not just small committees, but large committees. And I just use that 100-page report because that's one I'm familiar with. Review a governor's report, or even an information report filed by a federal candidate with the Secretary of State's office. There's hundreds of pages of donors. Having worked on one governor's race and seen their reports, it's 200 or 300 pages. One would certainly hope that a candidate would have asked someone to be the registered agent, to be the treasurer, to file a report that knew how to spell Secretary of State. That's not always been the occasion. There may end up being a friend of the candidate, friend of the campaign manager, asked to do this that may not understand XMLS schemas, may not realize until 2 days or 3 days before the report's due that he's got a report that has to be retyped into the database. I mean, I can just see there can be some horror scenarios and somebody walking up with a multi-page report, simply not knowing the rules. As much training as your staff does, as much publicity as it gets in the press, you may just end up with an occasion with a fairly large committee simply walking up to the counter to file. There has also been the strategic reason for filing paper late, 5 minutes before deadline. I have stood in the lobby downstairs. I have waited until 5 minutes to five. To file a multi-page paper report is not as easily accessible or reviewable by the press on the filing deadline. Making it easier to just get it in and not have it commented on in the paper the next morning. This effectively eliminates that by requiring the electronic filing, which means an instant review by the press if they're so interested to do so.
You know, and I perhaps should have mentioned, but I'm glad you brought that up. Until January 1 of this year, as you know, there actually was a statutory approach to that issue, and that is that people who filed electronically had an extra 2 days to file. And I think that was my understanding was the purpose of that was for the very reason you indicated, is that to try to eliminate the incentive to file in paper on the last day, knowing that the electronic filer's information would be available immediately, paper filers, their information would not. But that did expire, you know, January 1, so that was actually another factor in honoring Senate Bill 231, but also pushing people to electronic filing because of that built-in incentive that exists to file on paper.
Correct, and I would predict that even in 2008, you're going to find registered agents trying to file 2 days later electronically. Best education effort possible, emails and mails to the existing registered agents, it simply won't catch everybody. And not everybody reads every email that they receive or reads every piece of every mail that comes in. You're going to have people still trying to file 2 days later in the next cycle. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's why I think that, you know, some degree of latitude and not this 15-day filing requirement would help tremendously in that regard.
Well, and I wanted to think that through a little bit. I mean, I think, again, the rule contemplates that either you know at the beginning of the election cycle, 15 days before the election cycle, I think, or before the first report, that you have just an ongoing hardship, and I guess that may mean you don't have a computer, something like that. You could go ahead and just file for an exemption for the election cycle, or you have a hardship that arises later that might be that your computer breaks or something like that. I mean, I think that's kind of the idea of the draft, but what I think I heard you say is that realistically, it's hard to separate it like that, and why not allow people to bring in their paper report on the deadline day with their request for a hardship exception, I think.
Right there on the spot. And they can then be encouraged for the next reporting cycle to please do electronically. You don't catch people by surprise. I just think it would be a smoother method. I can still remember 2 years ago when apology letters and waiver requests, one could have some fun in writing them, whether it's the old, you know, excuse that the dog ate my homework, you know, and there was a hardship and there was an emergency and I just couldn't get it done in time, but the letters used to be at least interesting reading until they were published in the Rocky Mountain News for the rest of the city to see them, or the rest of the state, and they weren't quite so fun anymore, and at least my letters have become much more professional. Not going into the hardship reason that I might really have had.
But if somebody really did walk in at 5 o'clock on a deadline day, I mean it'd be tough to reject the report. And I think you're suggesting at least first time you probably would. We probably should not.
Correct.
But next time, would we then? Are you suggesting we then could if it did not appear that there was good cause?
Exactly. I mean I just don't want to see a lot of new registered agents, a lot of new friends of the candidate, friends of the campaign manager, getting slam dunked because they didn't know.
Yeah.
So I just think that there should be provisions for allowance. I mean, that's already covered in the waiver request, but that's an administrative step down the road, and I think we can just avoid some of it up front.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions for Mr. Shires?
Mr. Shires, I did have a question for you. You mentioned that you were concerned about changing and mandating electronic filing would generate a lot of requests for waivers and audit notices and so forth from our office and from the county clerks. I did want to clarify that our intent with this proposed rule would be to only require electronic filing for those filers who file with the Secretary of State. I don't think that this rule would, at least as it's proposed, it's not proposed to cover any local filings.
That would be fine. But I know that obviously the county clerk and recorders have suggested in the past they'd be allowed to charge fees to cover their cost of data inputting and re-keystroking everything. And a lot of the counties have mirrored your rules pretty darn closely and just adopted them outright. Especially the larger counties, it's just a lot easier to say, okay, same rules apply. So I'm just anticipating some trouble, and there may not be a lot. You and I have had a number of conversations and certainly understand the funding confusion around a filing period, especially when they're once every 2 weeks and it's October and the election's just around the corner. There's a lot of fun and exciting things that occur.
Any other questions?
One question for you, and that has to do with the 15-day rule. Do you think that a better solution, a good solution, would be to allow day of filing, paper filing with the request with good cause for a period of time, and then to implement the 15-day rule so that there is absolutely fair notice to everybody?
I think it'd be easier just to strike it and not have it in there. I mean, I don't see that there's a requirement to have 15 days to strike that portion that you file a hardship, whether it be the day of, and then you say, you know, this is a hardship once, but please don't try and do it again. It just becomes a conversation between the Secretary of State's office and the citizens. I mean, it's the overall goal is to make sure there's fair disclosure of where campaign money is coming from and how the money is being spent. Certainly, we all want to make our lives easier, your staff's, the candidate's staff, and when we can at least take some of the monkey business out of the bureaucracy, it's always a good thing.
Thank you. The next person signed up is Nancy Doty.
Good afternoon. I am Nancy Doty, Arapahoe County Clerk and Recorder, and I want to thank you for taking time to hear our comments today. This afternoon, I would like to bring to your attention some issues which affect counties in regards to reporting requirements for campaign finance. During the past year, Arapahoe County experienced a great amount of extra work due to reporting by candidates in special districts. In Arapahoe County, we have 271 special districts, and we had 459 candidates. Most of the candidates had no committees, but our office had to input the candidate registration forms electronically as required by the Secretary of State. Candidates could do this electronically themselves, but most do not, either because they don't know how, or perhaps just because they don't want to. It takes my staff a great deal of time to enter the manual records to the electronic format, and this is an additional expense to my county taxpayers. We also keep a spreadsheet of these candidates so we know who has committees and who doesn't and just how many candidates we have. I would like to suggest a couple of solutions which would help the counties in being the focus point for special districts. And I don't know how that came about in the first place, but it has impacted our work. First, could rules also address special districts, candidates, and committees and require filings to be done electronically? Or two, could special districts file reports with the Department of Local Affairs rather than the county clerk and recorder's office? Or possibly even with the attorney who filed the organizational documents rather than with the county? Or three, could the counties charge a fee to cover our time involved in converting the records from manual to electronic format? There also needs to be a way to upload the records to the electronic format using a system such as QuickBooks or Excel or other ways. In conclusion, I would like to see if possible if the Secretary of State rules could address some of these issues so that you could help the counties out with all these special districts.
Can I ask a couple of questions?
Sure.
I didn't follow what you were saying about the uploading. Uploading from what to what?
Well, right now you cannot transfer information from Excel into your spreadsheets. That's required. It has to be manually input.
As far as I know,
I haven't done it personally, but that's what I've been told.
Because you have local candidates that are maintaining records in Excel?
Yes.
So they'll turn in paper printouts from
they
Excel?
They might do that. Or even for the candidate themselves to upload it into that format that you need.
And I think it is feasible to do that. Christy, did you want to address that?
Right. Actually, in the last few weeks, we have just tested and made available what we call our TABDA limited upload for county use. And if that information didn't get to you, I'm more than glad to resend that. I don't think at this point we have had a county that has contacted us for the specifications. But
okay.
You can actually, you do have to set up the Excel spreadsheet in a certain format.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an extract function which comes through our website. So I would be glad to work with you on that and see if we can help.
Right. That would be great. I guess our candidates need to know that. And is Excel the only other format they can use, or could they use QuickBooks, some other system too?
I'm not a technical person, but I know that anything that can export a tab delimited format, we can account for. And we also have an XML interface that's being developed and tested. Should be available hopefully within the next month or so. And so that's a second way. But the XML format does take a little more expertise sometimes than small organizations will have in technical aspects.
Well, I'm just hoping the candidates will be able to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we could work with the counties on that now that we have that capability. And it is going to be a little awkward, I think, just because it does require, as I understand it, a couple of steps. There has to be an export from Excel in the right manner and then an import into our system. Right? So it's not quite like just pushing one button or something, but at least it can be done to avoid the duplicate data entry, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you were referring to that I wanted to comment on about, I mean, you had several suggestions for dealing with the special districts, and we perhaps could look at at whatever the requirements are about where special districts file and so forth, although I think that would probably take a statutory change. But
right.
But the third one rings a bell with me, because I think last year, and you suggested a fee, authorizing the counties to charge a fee. And when this office was considering what became Rule 11, as I recall, and maybe even an early draft, did extend authority to the counties to charge a fee as well. And I think at least the discussion, right or wrong, was we could not authorize the counties to do that. If they either have that authority or they don't, but we did not necessarily have that. The ability of counties to charge fees for services might be governed by Title 30 or other statutes, whereas in the Secretary of State's office, at least, it was partly governed by the statute that governs the Secretary of State's office. And so, as I recall, we kind of backed off from including something like that in the rule. I mean, certainly we can look at that again, but it was, I think, at least the feeling at the time that counties perhaps could do that.
And we have not done that yet. I would like to, but I need to be able to base it on some sort of authority. If you think we have that authority, I would love to hear and get that in writing.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Doty? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Shires?
This is a follow-on comment to that last discussion. Nancy, this may be of interest to you as well as other clerk and recorders, but part of the work that the election staff bill and campaign compliance did was to solve that electronic appending. We do not retype. We append directly into your database. The proprietary software that we have where we store the data initially, I can pull in any Excel format by any candidate and have done so. I have taken people's databases in any format that they have, bring it into my system very easily, and simply press two or three buttons. It's a little bit more than one. And it's ready to be appended up to the Secretary of State's office. So the technology does exist. It's present. But it took someone that knows what they're doing to program that. It's not something that's just going to happen with a random committee with volunteer staff, unless they happen to be getting their master's in programming at one of the universities around the state. It took a lot of work and a lot of coordination to make it actually happen. But the process to do that simply does exist.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify? If not, then We will take the matter of the rules under advisement. I am going to leave the record open until the close of business tomorrow, February 7th. So if any member of the public wishes to submit written testimony, we will accept that until 5 p.m. tomorrow, February 7th. If there's no other business, then for the record, the time is 2:39 p.m., and that concludes today's hearing. Thank you very much for coming.